I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Zivi Owens, and you're listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. This 30-minute podcast features a new author interviewed by me every single day, 365 days a year, for about 30 minutes. I am also the publisher for Zivi Books, which publishes 12 books a year in fiction and memoir. Our books are already out now, and you can check it out on zivibooks.com. And we have a magazine called Zivi Mag, where we have lots of wonderful essays and lifestyle features. That's at zivimag.com. We have classes at zibiclasses.com. And I recently opened a bookstore in LA called Zivi's Bookshop at 1113 Montana Avenue at 11th Street in Santa Monica. I hope that you are able to enjoy some of our other offerings. But this here podcast is the basis of all of it and started in 2018. And no matter what I do, this is basically my favorite thing. Enjoy. Lori Frankel is the author of Family Family, a novel. Lori is the New York Times bestselling, award-winning author of novels such as The Atlas of Love, Goodbye for Now, and the Reese's Book Club pick, This Is How It Always Is. Lori lives in Seattle with her husband, daughter, and border collie. She makes good soup. I have to say, I absolutely loved this book, Family Family. It's one of my top books so far of the year. Welcome, Lori. Thanks for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Family Family. I'll just say it that way.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, so I'm thrilled, and I'm thrilled to be here, and I appreciate so much you're doing this.
Of course. Okay, as I was just saying, I'm like obsessed with this book. I love the boys. I love all of it. It's so original. Oh my gosh. It's hilarious. Even all the like malaprop. I mean, can't even say that right. I mean, just like all these funny things you do. It's like all the way through. It's just so first rate. I don't know. I loved it. Okay. Tell listeners what Family Family is about.
First of all, thank you. I appreciate it so much. It's such a weird time after the book has left my hands, but before mm-hmm. it's in anyone else's. Yes. So it means the world to me. Family Family is about, it's about a family. And it is about adoption. And it is about not just one adoption, but a lot and a lot of different kinds of adoption, which is sort of the idea that I went into it with, and then it proved much, much more complicated than that. There are lots and lots of books about adoption. You know, so often when we talk about lack of representation, we really mean a lack. And that's not the problem with adoption. It's not that there is no representation. It's just that the representation is so negative. Mm-hmm. And when it isn't negative, it's this like, well, then a miracle occurred and they settled for each other and it wasn't terrible. And I hate that story. Mm-hmm. So I set out to tell a different one. And it took me a long time to figure out, well, okay, how do you tell a story if your point is that, well, it's not really terrible. It wasn't that these horrible things happened. And that is why there's not just just one, but a variety, I guess, of adoptive families in this book. It is also about a movie star, and it is about social media and cancel culture and scandal that we sort of get caught up in and rile up ourselves. And it's about dream jobs and the way in which dream jobs are dreamy, but they are also jobs, and which is something that I think about all the time because I definitely have a dream job and it is dreamy, but it is also a job.
Well, you achieved your goal in such a creative way, right? By having the main character, I always forget everybody's name. What is her name?
India.
Yeah. Having India, of course, India, there was a whole backstory of that name. How did I forget that? Anyway, having India be the movie star who's in a movie about the adoption that's then not with the right depiction. And so it's like this whole meta thing that you get set up. You know, it's funny. I just went to this the screening of All the Light You Cannot See, which have you been watching that? I don't know.
Haven't yet because the book was so good.
I know.
Oh, is it going to do it justice? I don't know. So I will, but I haven't worked up to it yet, I think.
Yeah. Well, I was like out in a place, like I had to go see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I was like a little reluctant. It's really good. But anyway, the star was there and she's low sight.
Yeah.
And so she was talking exactly as you are about representation. And she's like, all the depictions of, you know, no sight or low sight people have you like with this cane and this and that. Like, this is not what it's like. It doesn't have to be the story. She's like, I don't look spacey and like, you know, that I can't, you know, and it's just what you're saying. Like, it doesn't have to be a sob story. And where are the flip sides? Why is there only one narrative?
Yes, exactly. Where are the flip sides? Why is there only one narrative? Yeah. And I think some of the answer to that question is narrative involves misery. Like, there have to be low points in order for you to go up again. There has to be this arc. It's like by definition.
Right.
And that just means you have to find a different way to tell about it and to talk about it. And I also think these are complicated, complex issues, which makes them really wonderful things to talk about for 400 pages, but not for 400 characters. You know, I think they don't lend themselves well to sound bites or to posts. I need 10 hours from you. I need you to sit down and like, let me tell you a story. And that makes it a wonderful thing to write a novel about, but also that's a high bar basically.
Well, but when you put it that way, that you need like 10 hours, I'm like, oh, no, I don't have 10 hours for you.
That's right. Yeah.
But, you know, but then when you read it and your chapters are also short and punchy, you know, like your time like disappears.
Yeah.
Like reading time is not like regular time because when you're reading something good, you lose the clock entirely. And that's kind of what, you know, this book does. It's like you can't sleep and you want to finish and da da da. So
yay.
It also doesn't feel like 400 pages because that would also be like, forget that too, you know, but it's these short sections all linked together. You know, it's almost, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. I hope so. And I feel exactly that way. As a reader, I want it to move. I want to be turning the pages. And if it does, you can take as long as you want. But if I'm slogging through it, then I feel like, no, we got to pick pace.
Yeah.
You know, because you're right. 10 hours is a lot of time to ask of someone. And especially now, but probably always. And when you put it like that, like, okay, give me 10 hours and we'll do this thing. And your immediate reaction is, no, I don't have 10. What do you agree? I don't have 10 hours. Yeah. And so I think, you know, as writers, we have to earn it.
Yeah. It's really amazing. Anyone reads anything when you put it that way.
It is really amazing. It is. And I'm therefore so grateful to people for doing it. And myself, I do spend almost all my time reading books. So, mm-hmm. So I feel like, okay, I know what that transaction is.
How did you come up with the characters? Were you ever into acting? I feel like it's so deep into that world as well, that whole like aspirational and wanting to act but not being able to sing and, you know, having just even when India realizes like, oh my gosh, this is what I'm meant to do. Not everybody has that feeling.
No, not everybody has that feeling. And so I'm a theater fan. I'm a deep, deep, I love the theater. I love musical theater. I love musicals, unlike India. I love plays. I love the theater. I always, always have. I cannot sing, but it turns out I also cannot act. So that's pretty much going to be a barrier for me to be doing. It is really interesting, I think, to love something as an audience member and have no sense of wanting to or being able to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And for me, that contrasts with reading, which I also am a huge fan of, and I'm doing all the time. And eventually that spilled over into wanting to do it myself, wanting to write books myself. And that's not on the table for me for theater. And so in some ways it's this, I don't know, it's a pure love. It is just something that I have always loved, but never aspired to, maybe. Mm-hmm. It's also true that my academic background is in Shakespeare. And so I have all of this, I taught play writing and I've taught play reading, you know, I've taught drama, theater, all of that stuff, like from an academic standpoint. And that's very, very different, but it did give me a place to start as far as research went. And it's super fascinating research. It is an interesting world to be immersed in from that perspective. So all of that was a pleasure.
So then when was your first attempt at fiction?
One of the things that I think is interesting is that, how do I want to say it? I am a novelist, like consummately. Like I think the way people want to give you their star signs, I am a novelist, like in this kind of core of my being sort of way. It's what I want to read and it's what I want to write. So I had tried to write short stories, which seems like the entry point. I mean, and the kind of most direct answer to your question, but I didn't want to write short stories. I wanted to write novels. And I think that you cannot know whether you can write a novel until you have actually already written a novel. Mm-hmm. It is a really difficult thing to sit down and try to do because they're long and they take a really long time. So, you know, I think if you want to know if you can write a sonnet, you can sit down and try to write a sonnet. I think if you want to know if you can write fiction, you can sit down and write a short story. And it might take weeks and it might take months. But like, okay, that's a tackleable sort of a goal. I just think it isn't true with long form. So I did not know that I could do it until I had already done it. I was teaching in Baltimore and then I fell in love with a person in Seattle and moved out to Seattle, where I am still, and got a teaching job out here. And I had this block of time, like 6 months between jobs for the first time in my life, that I had time to actually sit down and say, is this something I can do? I have no idea. and I figured it out after I had done, I had read 10,000 novels and that seems like pretty good training, but I just don't think there's any way to know whether you can get from the beginning to the end of the thing without doing it.
Very true. When you were structuring this novel, who came first? Fig? India? One of the other characters? Like where did the, or did it all just sort of come together?
Yes, it's such a good question. So India used to die in the first sentence of the book.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I know. Which is really remarkable given that she's certainly the heart of this novel. And I don't think it's really much of a spoiler to say that she lives through it. But she did not used to. And she was always a huge part of the book, but she was kind of hanging over it because we knew that she died. And simply it was just too sad and she had too much life in her and it colored the book in a way that it was too costly. Mm-hmm. But therefore I had her kids too. So Fig also, like they came together. I had Fig's voice in my head from the beginning because she's 10. And so her voice is very distinct and she's very smart. Smart 10-year-old, precocious and smart 10-year-old, which is how I like my kids. And therefore, that voice is really clear and I think easier to write because of that and easier to, you empathize with her immediately because she is a child and she is smart and curious and originally because she had lost her mom. And so, well, pretty much everything else about this book changed over the course of it. I mean, I cut 300,000 words from this thing.
What?
I cut 300,000 words from this book. That's nearly three times as many words as remain. You know, it has two timelines, one of which I dragged to the trash can and redrafted from scratch. And so, wow.
Which one?
Well, the past one, because as I say, the present timeline, because she used to die. And then, you know, and then we had this whole, you know, aftermath. So right. We were getting the story of her past leading up to her death. And then we saw her legacy. Mm-hmm. And so that had to go. I mean, it just had to go. It is also true that I started this book on March 3rd, 2020. Mm-hmm. So it was really, I mean, it went really well for a week. And then my kid came home from school for a year and a half, you know, like the whole world got derailed. And I think there's no way to have been writing something and not have that get derailed as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, everything changed.
Well, to your, you know, writing of Fig as a 10-year-old. I have a 10-year-old daughter. And so this was like spot on, you know, and I have boy-girl twins who are older. They're 16. But anyway, there were like so many things. I was like, she got that right. Yep. Uh-huh. That one. Yep. Uh-huh.
Awesome. So. Yes. I love that note. Thank you. That's great.
Even like the agent character. I mean, the sense of humor in this very subtle, but I chuckle out loud multiple times. I mean, it's not like you're not doing slapstick. It's like this very sophisticated but hilarious comedy that like you have to know the words that are, it's just so great. It's like a hidden code or something. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like you might miss it, but.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope so. Because that too, I think contributes to what you're talking about. I want to earn your 10 hours. I want you to be amused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes we all have stuff we need to get off our chests. Even if we don't think it's interfering with our daily life, there are some things you just haven't processed, be it grief or trauma, eating disorders, anything. It might be time to work on those things, and I have a solution for you. Therapy. Online therapy by BetterHelp. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. I took the brief questionnaire online where there were, I don't know, 20 questions. It didn't take long at all, maybe 3 minutes. And then I got matched with a therapist who could help me work on whatever. I picked trauma because even though it happened in 2001, I am somehow still not over the loss of my friend on 9/11. And it is what it is. BetterHelp is going to help. And I am so excited, especially because with my special code, instead of $80 a month, it is 10% off, $72 a month, which is so much less than traditional therapy. And you'll get a perfect therapist for you. There are 35,000 therapists to choose from, so you'll find the right one. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/momsdonthavetime today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. .com/momsdonthavetime.
So do you like make yourself laugh when you're writing? Like, do you chuckle at all?
I don't think I do, but I do. I see the jokes coming and I think, okay. Oh yeah, that's going to work. That's going to be good. and they come to me just a few lines before they come into my head, maybe a few lines before they actually come out of my fingers. And I think, yeah, okay, that's going to be nice. That's going to work. Once I've established the characters and edited them and revised them a lot, they start to talk. And so I hear them and they surprise me as if I were reading it. And that's, I feel like that's what you're writing to get to that point where the characters are amusing you.
Interesting. Did you work alongside your editor? I mean, I know this is not your first book. Like, did you, you're wearing a shirt that says edit. So, or is this like to go through that many words and changes and all of that? Like, I feel like to do that alone in a room, you'd tear your hair out, you know?
Yes, there's definitely some tearing of hair. I did work with my editor a lot, and she is a a person who has a lot of notes, and we do go back and forth. But I did almost all of that 300,000 words of cutting before she saw it. I had done most of the major overhauling before I sent it out to her, because I don't want her to, I like her. I want her to think well of me. I don't want her to see it until it's really pretty good. And it wasn't working. I mean, sometimes I think like, okay, this is working, but it could be better. Mm-hmm. And then I will do those large edits, but I have to talk myself into them more. This one, I didn't have to talk myself into, because it just was not working. It was, mm-hmm. I was having to do a lot of, because it was the present timeline, I was having to do a lot of machinations, mm-hmm. because the world was changing every morning. I woke up and it was somewhere different. And you're like, oh, well, you can't have the scene at school because school is closed. Mm-hmm. Oh, we can't have the scene in a coffee shop because coffee shop is closed. Mm-hmm. Oh, those people can't run into each other at the grocery store. It's grocery store. I mean, it was like that level of thing.
Yep.
But also, you know, it was just admitting to myself, look, I can't kill this woman. Mm-hmm. So I have to find some other way of telling this story. I will say, though, that I am an editor. I am a person who writes really terrible drafts and then iterates them, mm-hmm. just writes them again and again and again and again and again until they get better. And it is frustrating, and it is not a linear approach to novel writing, I think, or human being, or really any of those things. If I could do it a different way, I certainly would, because there is that hair tearing, but I can't.
That's just the way it is.
That's just the way it is.
I found it really interesting, and this is part of the flipping the narrative we were talking about earlier. When India is going through all these birth mom like albums, right, and scrapbooks, and learning everything, and then finding the one that's different, and the way she talked to
Camille.
You know, she's like, I don't want these letters that are like, oh, I'm going to take, you know, I'm going to be a dear mom. Like, I'm going to take it. She's like, this is your child. Like, this is, don't even talk to me about it like that. And that's something that I hadn't read either. Tell me about that.
Yeah. That is exactly why, because you haven't read that either. And I hadn't read that either. One of the things, there are a lot of implicit assumptions, I think, about adoption that we're not looking at very closely, and for a lot of reasons. And I think it isn't serving anyone to make those boxes really narrow. I don't think anyone is ever served by really narrow boxes. I feel like this is my fifth novel. They are very different from one another, but like, this is what I'm always on about, is like wider ranges of normal make the world a better place for everyone. In the case of adoption, and in the case of like birth moms in particular, I think it is all really well-intentioned and trying to hold space for and trying to honor. And yet I think we are often doing people a disservice when we say, like, this is how you must feel. Mm-hmm. This is how you are always going to feel. This is how this is going to go. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's dehumanizing, because everyone else might feel any different number of different ways about anything at all. Whereas we say, like, birth mothers have to feel this way and this order about this thing, and that's the only thing that's acceptable. There are lots of reasons for that. And they are, I mean, they are really loving reasons in a lot of ways. But I think they're ignoring human complexity and confining people in ways that I think are not serving anyone in the equation. And so I wanted to look at it more deeply and more complexly. Hmm. Complexly, is that a word? More complicatedly. More closely. And I guess, and you know, and again, I think this is the beauty of novels, like from a character perspective, not from a policy perspective, not from a social media perspective, not from a 1200 word article perspective. Like, let's really look at this, mm-hmm. and look at this person as a person, see where we are.
I love that. Oh my gosh.
Thank you. Thank you.
Where are you, by the way, with your next book? Do you hate when people ask you that?
I don't hate when people ask me that. But in this case, it is a complicated question. I mean, at the moment, because I'm in this kind of pre-pub place, I'm mostly doing stuff for this one still. Mm-hmm. I have started the next one. I have always started the next one. I feel like novels are really daunting. And if you don't start the next one, then you will never start. Mm-hmm. You know, you stand at the bottom of the mountain, you're like, no, that's too tall. I can't. So I feel like it is good and useful to always be in the middle of something new. But mm-hmm. it is also true that because I revise so much and so thoroughly, probably wouldn't tell you what it's about anyway, because I'm superstitious. Writers are superstitious and weird about things like that. But if I did, you'd come back and say, like, what happened to that novel? And I'd be like, oh yeah, no, then something else completely and entirely, because they go through these huge changes.
Wow. Well, it's good to know that's normal though, right?
I guess, yes. I never know whether people find this heartening or really demoralizing. And
I find it, personally, I find it heartening, okay. You know, so that's good.
Yeah, that's really good. It's really good.
You said you're just a really huge reader. And you only read fiction. So what are some of your all-time favorites, or something you've read recently that you love?
Let's look at my many books on my bookshelf. This is the book I'm recommending to everybody these days.
I keep hearing great things about it. Is it really amazing?
Okay. So amazing. I read it years ago because the publication on this one has been so slow, and now I'm reading it again, and it's just fantastic. I mean, it's fantastic the first time, it's fantastic the second time, it's timely, it's amazing.
We must not think of ourselves.
It takes place in the Warsaw Ghetto. Mm-hmm. So it's historical fiction. It is World War II. It is not cheerful, but it is hopeful. It is not a depressing book. Mm-hmm. It is a remarkable book because you know how it ends, but also you know how it ends. It is a book about people who are keeping one person in particular who is keeping an archive. And that is a true story, and that archive survives, and you know that it survives because you're reading about it. And so it is a really remarkable book. I love all of her books, and that is the best one. So, okay. You know, take that. I am also recommending to everybody Naomi Alderman's new book, The Future. She's another one I love. Everything she's ever written. I did not think that she could top The Power. I felt like The Power was an essentially perfect book. This book it blew my mind. I mean, it blew my mind. It was one of these books where like every three pages, so I had to put it down and go, okay, what? I mean, it's that level of thing. It's very smart. It's about tech billionaires behaving badly, and the geniuses, the rogue geniuses who want to fix it. And it is epic in scope, and she too manages to do it. I mean, it's, you know, it's 350 pages, 400 pages. And you can't stop turning them. I'm recommending this book to everyone. In the well of all-time favorites, this book, We're All Completely Beside Ourselves, Karen Joy Fowler, is a book I recommend to everyone who will sit still long enough to listen. If people have not read this book, the thing to do is to read it without reading anything about it. Don't read the reviews. Don't read the back. Don't even look at the cover if you can help it. Because it's got a twist and you want to preserve it if you can. Though it's really fantastic, even if you know it. She's definitely in my like all-time favorites. I mean, gosh, I could do this all day long.
I know. I was like, you should have your own show. I'm just sitting here watching it. This is great.
Yeah, I really, all day long, I could do this. Percival Everett is someone I am forever recommending to people to read. The Trees is another one that just, I mean, it's speaking of funny, this book is laugh out loud, funny book about lynching and race in America. And gosh, that is, you know, a remarkable combination. He's amazing. You know, this is a man with 30-some novels. He writes like one a year. They are unlike anything else I ever read by anybody else. The one that's coming out next year is called James. It's Huck Finn yes. from Jim's. Yeah. It's amazing. He's amazing. He's amazing. Anyway, as I say, I could do this all day long. So you should cut me off. But
no, I know. I'm going to just like come to you for all my book recommendations. This is great.
The world would be a better place if people would just read what I told them to, I think.
Do you do anything? Like, do you post your lists and like make a whole thing about it?
I don't actually. I mean, I'm asked often enough in ways like this. And so, you know, and I'm always so and I Zoom with a lot of book clubs, and they always ask that question. And that's a really good question for book clubs to ask. But I don't have any sort of a, you know, I don't know. It would be a good thing to do, like a Substack or something like this, where I just every month told people what they should read.
You should. Let me know. I can help you set it up. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you. That'd be awesome.
Okay. I know you've already given a lot of advice. But if there's one more piece that an aspiring novelist out there should know, or even just somebody working on a follow-up who's just like adrift or whatever, what is your advice?
Well, and you are adrift, because I think one of the unfortunate things about novel writing is that what you learned writing the last one doesn't actually help you with the next one because they're so different from one another. That's not an uplifting piece of advice. I have two, I think. One is read everything. And that's everyone's best advice. And it's because it's the best piece of advice. A thing I tell students all the time is the advice that you're given about writing, all of it, take it or leave it. It works for the person who's given it to you. It may very well have absolutely nothing to do with your process, except that one. You got to be reading. There's no point otherwise. You figure out what it is that you might read that is going to drive and steer your writing usefully for you. It's not like if you're writing this, you have to be reading this and this and this and this, but you got to be reading something in order to support that the process and the voice and the whole idea of it. I just think it's non-negotiable. I feel like personally, I am always writing about what I am reading. Mm-hmm. And I find that practice to be when I'm teaching people how to write, and therefore they have to do what I say. I make that part of the curriculum. And this is the other one, edit. That's the other piece of advice is like, to fear not the fact that your draft is crap. It's going to be crap for a while. You can make it better and you will. And that too is not like, oh, I'll just go through it one or two more times and then everything will be fine. I think it takes me hundreds of times of going to the beginning and writing through to the end and fixing things and going back to the beginning and writing through to the end. But that's okay because that is part of the process. So that is my other piece of advice. Don't despair, edit.
Love it. Lori, thank you so much. Thank you for the thought-provoking entertainment and all of it from Family. And yeah, I am a huge new fan and I'm sorry I'm only coming to you now, but I'm delighted. I feel like I've discovered this gem that everyone knew about and they're all like, well, yeah, of course.
Okay, fine.
I was just late to the party.
Welcome. And thank you so much, Zibby, for doing this. This is a pleasure. You are a delight. I'm thrilled and grateful.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah. All right. Bye, Lori.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.